United States against Maryland is our next case this morning. Mr. Funk.
May it please the court, Marcus Funk on behalf of the United States, the appellant in this matter. The defendant in this case was a high-ranking Irish civil servant who traveled to the United States to attend White House functions on St. Patrick's Day in 2001. He made a side trip to Chicago where he intended to have sex with an underage girl. The defendant pleaded guilty and at sentencing, the district court granted him a four-level downward departure on the basis of diminished capacity, as well as an additional two-level downward departure on the basis of a combination of conditions, specifically his alienated status as well as his health condition. I'd like to address the effect of this was essentially to cut his potential sentence in half. It went from 41 to 56 months down to 21 to 27 months. The district court sentenced the defendant to 21 months.
Can I ask you a question, Mr. Funk?
Yes,
even on de novo review, which I understand is what you believe is the correct standard. So let's assume that's right. We have lots of instances in which our review is de novo, but we nonetheless give deference to things, to underlying fact findings. It happens all the time. You think of, quite a few situations where we say it's, de novo to review voluntariness of a confession, but the subsidiary, the underlying fact findings we defer to. Here the district court looks at an expert report and then all this anecdotal testimony about a rather sudden change in Mr. Mallon's behavior and comes to the conclusion that he's impaired in his ability to control his impulses. Isn't that the kind of thing we should give some deference to as an underlying fact finding?
Your Honor, even if the court accepts that what the district court found were true facts, that he was suffering from a diminished capacity, what the court did not do and what the government's primary position is, what really the core of the diminished capacity downward departure motion is that the district court failed, and as to the expert report, failed to link up those hallucinations, delusions, and various other symptoms of an impairment that he purportedly had, and
impulse control too.
And failed to link that up to any specific facts as to what he did in this case. In this case, he planned, as a background matter, all of the impairment that the defendant reportedly suffered stemmed from primarily, at least, from a heart attack in December of 2001 that he suffered.
Yeah.
I believe 2000, I'm sorry, Your Honor. And that thereafter he suffered from hypoxia, a lack of blood to the brain, and that caused these various impairments. In June of that year, of 2000, the defendant was actively engaging in the same kinds of chat with people who purported to be underage minors and may or may not have been underage minors that he continued to do after his operation. And so the district court made factual findings with regard to the fact that, with regard to his impairment, but what the district court failed to do in the government's view is link those up to any specific factor. The defendant, when he was on the tapes, audio tapes that are in the record, and where he attempts to lure what he believes to be a child into the United States, when he carefully, very carefully, attempts to make sure that her mother is not informed of any contact that he's having with her, that she destroy all the records of any contact, that she destroy any pictures of him that he has sent over, and basically tries to make sure that the child, there's no chance of him being
now, is your view, just as a matter of, science or something, that people with impaired impulse control are similarly incapable of trying to cover up what they're doing?
Your Honor, I have no background in these matters, and
it seems like that's the equation you're making, that he couldn't have taken all of these precautionary steps, which the record's quite clear he took, had he been impaired in the way that he's arguing he was, or that the district court found.
I believe the argument that we are making here is that the impaired, if there was an impaired impulse control, even assuming that's true, it certainly didn't manifest itself in any way in his broader life, and it didn't appear to manifest itself in this crime. He was very careful. He didn't act impulsively. In fact, he acted quite the contrary. He was very careful, very cunning in the way that he attempted to lure this, what he believed to be a vulnerable child, into his web. And so for those reasons, the government believes that the linkage that is required by the law was not made in this case, and that is really the deficiency in the court's ruling as to the diminished capacity. Turning to the issue of the combination of conditions departure, the court first of all divided that combination of conditions into both the portable alien or alienated status as well as the health issue. With regard to the portable alienated status, there's absolutely nothing that distinguishes this individual from any other individual who is an alien who comes to the United States and attempts to engage in this sort of conduct with a child. In fact, unlike an individual who is, let's say, an illegal alien who resides in the United States.
We sometimes see departures in alien cases on the ground that the alien becomes ineligible for release to a halfway house for the final 6 months of a sentence. Was that possibility discussed here? I didn't see it discussed in the brief.
Your Honor, if it was discussed, to the extent it was discussed without any evidentiary support. I cannot recall any specific discussion of that, the applicability or inapplicability as to this defendant. What was discussed was,
is this the sort of crime where the defendant might otherwise be eligible for halfway house treatment?
Your Honor, I cannot speak to that. I simply do not know the answer to that question. The primary emphasis was that there was a purported 60-day delay between his release from the Bureau of Prisons to the time of his deportation. As it turns out, the Department of Homeland Security was poised to deport Mr. Mallon yesterday, 2 days before their anticipated deportation. That deportation was stopped. He is in Bureau of Prisons custody, but it serves to point out that that basis is a flawed basis. There was no evidentiary support for that.
Well, are there data on the average length of time an alien spends in federal custody after release and before removal?
There are no data that were presented to the district court by the defendant.
No, I didn't ask that question. I asked, are there data? And these are the kind of data that whatever the official successor to the INS is at the moment would keep, one would suppose. It sounds like the kind of data that the Department of Justice would have kept.
I agree, Your Honor.
It has to know how long, on average, it holds these people.
One would assume, Your Honor, I cannot answer that question, and it was not an issue that was brought before the district court. With regard to the basis of the health issue, there's nothing that distinguishes Mr. Mallon. There was nothing in the record that indicates the Bureau of Prisons is somehow unable to properly care for Mr. Mallon's health, and that basis likewise was therefore, in the government's view, found lacking from the factual support, and for those reasons, Your Honor, if I could reserve the remainder of my time.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Funk. Ms. Giacchetti.
Good morning. One of the issues that, I'd say the major issue of the government is that there is no linkage between the what appears to be almost a conceded mental impairment in the crime. In fact, the report submitted by Dr. Fletcher is replete with those linkages.
But does he give any reasons for it? I looked at that report, and it's very conclusory. It just says he has these impairments.
The front part of it does, but the factual basis, which we brought out to the judge and the judge heard, for example, in February of 2002, which was the time of the crime of being on the internet, there was a reported hallucination by a cousin in which he told her that he was working with the FBI to protect a young girl. He reports hallucinations regarding a Mel Kennedy directly related to his use of the internet and being on these sexually related channels. The hallucinations were observed almost immediately upon his arrest, and he was put on antipsychotic medication in the MCC. One of the identifiable things was the difficulty differentiating fantasy and reality, and as we argued to the court, he's in a fantasy channel and he's suffering from this.
Are there any epidemiological data suggesting that people who suffer from physical conditions engage in these kinds of activities more often than the rest of the general population?
No, but there's a developing area of evidence of the effect of coronary artery disease, not just the incident that occurred in December, but as the judge asked, and as we confirmed, there was coronary artery disease during the time. There are studies, as a matter of fact, there's some work being done right now in, I believe, England, about the lack of oxygen and exactly this in personality changes and significant personality changes.
But that actually leads to my question, because looking through this transcript, what struck me was the lack of rigor in discussing these kinds of things. You're talking about some fairly complex neurological and brain effects of other medical conditions, and I would have thought that both tests on the individual and concrete testimony from experts in this field, which I assuredly am not, nor does the district judge purport to be, and she said she isn't, but these aren't just binary phenomena that you're fine or you're impaired. They're very subtle distinctions, and this record doesn't really have that evidence.
Actually, Your Honor, there were 13 neuropsychological tests done, and several of the findings show.
But I mean, like EMGs or, you know, something. Was an area of his brain damaged?
I'm not sure that type of testing picks up this thing, but the testing that was done did pick up and he listed it, basically the, I believe they're called perseverations, they're basically indications, and actually even the government's experts said that this did indicate that the testing showed that perseverations that would support the conclusion of the delusions and the hallucinations, as well as memory impact and confusion. All of those were shown on the end of several of the tests, and that was discussed. I don't believe that this is necessarily something. And see, this is, I think, one of the things the government is doing is basically saying, well, it ought to rise to the level of an insanities defense.
No, they're not.
You should hear it on the tape. What the judge did is she did what the statute says, and that is, what is the relationship, make the departure relate to the impact of the impaired mental capacity, and that's exactly what she did. She said, I'm giving a 20% departure, I'm not excusing the behavior, I'm giving a 20% departure, and I'm picking that because because of the arguments the government made and that there were things he should have done. So it is recognized to be a sliding scale situation.
Why is this a 20% departure and not a 50%?
That she chose that primarily because she believed he had although she believed it very significantly affected his action, she said at the same time he was cognizant enough that he should have.
I mean, why you characterize it as a 20% departure? In guideline range, okay, but in practical sense here, the sentence was half the.
That is the way the court characterized it. She said, I'm going to go 20%, and that's approximately four levels.
But looking at it as levels and looking at the punishment are two different things.
Actually, I assume it's because normally when departures are done, the court is required to do it by level. What is the level?
You do it by two levels or three
levels.
Right. But to characterize that as a percentage is sort of misleading, especially when you're in the bottom of the guideline range, it's where the penalties.
That impact, but I think the judge was following her understanding of pegging it to the levels and explaining what she was doing, and that she did not see that as a departure that didn't take into account also the level of, even if she thought it would, that the impact of this, of his condition was actually quite significant. And she, in her comment, basically said, but I'm giving it less of a departure than I actually think its significance is, because he continued to work, he didn't seek help, and so she balanced those things out. From her viewpoint, it was actually a more significant impact on his actions. I know that one of the questions Your Honor asked was about the ineligible for the 6 months. As a matter of fact, it is in the record. This departure was first suggested by the probation officer, and she put that in her report that she believed that that would happen. It was discussed at court, and the judge concluded, in fact, that would happen, that he would serve the extra 6 months, and he did serve the extra 6 months.
But so. I thought that, in fact, people who've committed this particular crime are ineligible for halfway house treatment. I thought the judge made a comment to that effect, as a matter of fact, because if they're ineligible, then the deportable alien is in exactly the same situation as the U.S. citizen defendant.
No, she didn't make that comment, and the probation office certainly didn't say that. That was never presented to the court.
Well, what do we know? Would he have been eligible for release to a halfway house had he been a U.S. citizen?
I don't know. I don't know. I proceeded on what the probation office believed.
Why isn't that a crucial question?
Yes.
Since there's no, since the rationale for that departure falls away if this is a situation where no one gets halfway house treatment.
Well, actually, that portion of the rationale, one of the rationales in Ferrule is also recognizing the hardship of an alien who is in prison with his family in another country, and that is another basis that she went on. That is unusual. In this country, we very often have people whose families are here, and they are deportable. In this case, his family is not there, and Ferrule mentioned that as a factor.
I don't see what significance that would be as a ground of departure.
It
would not be a ground of departure that the Bureau of Prisons plans to imprison this person in Texas and his family is in Illinois, so his family won't see him as often. And if that's not a ground of departure, why should it be a ground of departure that his family is in a different country?
Won't
see him as often as would otherwise, but that doesn't seem relevant.
No, it isn't a separate ground of departure. It's part of the condition of being an alien. And Ferrule recognizes it as one of the factors that can be considered that goes to the hardship, which is why the judge also talked about that and its effect given his mental and medical condition here. I believe my time is up. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Giacchetti. Anything further, Mr. Funk?
Yes, Your Honor. A few comments. With regard to the defendant's letters, if anything, the letters show precisely what the government says is occurring here. The letters show a man who is entirely different from the man who we see on the internet, on the phone calls, and in person in Chicago. He selected this target. He decided to come from America to the United States to commit this crime. And so the letters that discuss this kind and caring individual show that there is a lack of understanding.
Do you know what the medical literature has to say about the relation, if any, between these kinds of coronary problems and criminal misbehavior?
Your Honor,
put epidemiological studies to one side for the moment. And is there a published medical literature addressing the question about what behavioral consequences these kinds of conditions carry?
Your Honor, I would answer that simply by saying that we relied on the statements of Dr. Dinwiddie or the report. We
in other words, you haven't looked.
We haven't looked because we do not have the training in that area. We relied on our experts.
You have the internet. There is actually very good databases on the internet that permit searches of this kind. And of course, the federal government is the principal maintainer of those databases.
With regard to the INS issue, one quick final comment with regard to the halfway house. The halfway house, as the government understands it, is the purpose of that is to reintegrate an individual into U.S. society. In this case, the purpose of the halfway house incarceration or option would not be served for an individual who will be immediately deported upon release from the Bureau of Prisons. So for those reasons, we would ask that this court reverse the judgment of the district court and have it reconsidered.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.